My name's Paul Bestall. This is Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome to a bonus edition of Mysteries and Monsters. So apparently it's Easter, not like any of us seem to know what day it is anymore. So I thought I'd treat you all with a bonus edition for Easter. I'm delighted to welcome back Nash Hoover, this time alongside his cousin Michaela. Obviously, this interview was recorded prior to the coronavirus crisis. So sadly, Nash and the Chasing Legends team have had to suspend their Kickstarter until later in the year. We still have a good chat about what the team have been up to, what upcoming investigations they've got planned, and where they want to go next. As usual, thank you again for the lovely reviews and emails we've received. It's always nice to hear from listeners, and I promise I will keep trying to get the very best guests around. As I record this introduction, I've just recorded three fantastic new shows this week with some very interesting guests, so I hope you enjoy them. One person in particular I have been desperate to speak to for a very long time, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Don't forget, please leave us a nice review. The more we get, the higher we get pushed up those recommended lists. So if you like what I do, help me reach more listeners with a review. I appreciate every single person that's done one. So if you haven't, please give me 15, 20 seconds of your time just to give us a little nice review. Especially over the last couple of weeks, because downloads have gone through the roof. So thank you for anybody that's just joined us. Welcome. And I hope you continue to find guests interesting to your ears. Wherever you are in the world, please stay safe, take care, and catch up with those who may need a call, or a message or an email just to say hello. These are strange times, my friends, so I think we need to embrace every possible second we can. Take care, have a lovely Easter, and now this week's bonus show. My guest this week sees the return of investigator Nash Hoover from the Chasing Legends team. Nash and his team have jumped into 2020 with some new filming and a Kickstarter launch towards the end of this month. Today, Nash is joined by his cousin and fellow intrepid investigator, Michaela. Nash and Michaela, welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. How are we?
Good. Thanks for having us, Paul.
Feeling good.
Excellent. So then, guys, it's been 8 months since you were last with me, Nash. Doesn't seem that long at all. What have Chasing Legends been up to?
Oh, all kinds of stuff. We recently got back from a trip out to Massachusetts doing some filming. We got a big lot of things planned for the next year and a half. Like you said, we got the Kickstarter launching at the end of the month to hopefully fund all these endeavors, and it's been a busy time for us.
Been playing with a lot of new gear and stuff like that too, and trying to incorporate that into our filming. It's been looking a lot nicer.
Yeah, I mean, have you found it now, because obviously you've been doing this for, what, maybe around 5 years or so? Have you found that...
Seven.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Have you found that now you've kind of gone into this year with a real determination? Have you found it easier because of the experience of the previous 7 years? You know, as you referred to there, Michaela, you've got some new tech and some new gizmos to play around with.
Yeah, I think we really have, like, you know, learned a lot of through trial and error over the years on, you know, what to do, what not to do, what really works for us, what doesn't. And obviously, like Michaela said, you know, we've got some new camera equipment, new audio equipment that we're bringing into the fold. So it's definitely definitely feels like more of a proper production than just, you know, like a few friends kind of going out and filming scary stuff like it was back in the beginning. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot more professional.
No, I think you're being a bit harsh on yourself. I quite enjoy your previous work. I thought it was quite intrepid and a little bit intriguing, some of the locations you'd visited.
Well, thank you.
So, why on earth were you in Massachusetts, or can you say?
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about it. So, the first episode that we filmed for our eventual first season was on the Pequodgies in Massachusetts, which is a Wampanoag like legend. It's kind of a mixture of both kind of spirit, like kind of ghosts and cryptid. They kind of book take the, you know, the similar forms of both, and it was a lot of fun. Weather was relatively fair for us, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. We hooked up with Alex Pietikov, and he had a really good time out there.
Alex is a wonderful man. I've had the pleasure of speaking to him a couple of times, and we talk regularly. So I think if Alex has taken you under his wing, I'm sure some intriguing adventures will await you.
Oh yeah.
So how did you find diving into the Pequodgie? Because as you refer to there, I've noticed that it's one of those cryptids that seems to have got a lot more notoriety than some due to its potential abilities to, let's say, send people on a very different path when they cross it, shall we say.
Yeah, it was interesting. We've been researching it for quite some years now, and it's the story of the Pequodgie is it's very interesting. The fact that it almost has the ability to kind of, you know, manipulate people and lure them in. You know, there's quite a few mysterious suicides in the region of the Freetown Fall River State Forest that we came across that kind of they kind of speculate had something to do with the legend, or at least, you know, they kind of coincided it with it. Want to add anything, Michaela?
I apologize. It was a very daunting experience. It was one of those investigations where we expected, well, we don't ever expect to find anything, but what we were expecting really did not play out at all, I guess, during our investigation. It was just a lot of, like, a culmination of so many different, like, personal stories, and then also, like, our investigations and our research, and it seemed almost mismatched, but it still turned out very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think most people, if they ever want a sort of indication about the Pequodgie, I think the best example of its potential that I'm aware of is a very famous scene in a documentary called The Bridgewater Triangle, which features one of their investigators allegedly possessed by one.
Yeah, I know the scene you're talking about. Yeah, it's we came across a lot of different stories too of people that, you know, have come across what they would describe to be as the Pequodgie, that, you know, they almost felt like they had to follow it. And it's pretty interesting. One of the theories that we came across was that it's, you know, the spirits of the Wampanoag tribe members, since the, you know, it's usually described as having spears or bows and arrows, and it just kind of took a different form than a regular, like, human figure.
Yeah, I mean, did you come across any sort of contemporary sightings, Nash, or were they more sort of traditional friend of a friend historical cases?
Yeah, it was more of the historical. one of the guys we interviewed, Paul Eno, he had some different stories that we didn't hear or we didn't know about until we talked to him. But that was also more of he heard it from someone else. And
I will say, being up on that cliff while we were doing the investigation and knowing that this is a creature that is known for luring people to their death, I was very uneasy about the entire thing.
Oh, yeah, up on the Asonet ledge.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think it's an alleged creature that you've really got to take into consideration because, you know, as Nash refers to there, it's very similar in some of the ways it behaves towards people. That reminds me of the traditions we have here in the UK about being fairy-led, where you're basically enticed away from people to come deep into the woods with it. So, I mean, it's difficult, I suppose, when you're dealing with such a traditional creature. But did you have those fears at the back of your mind that one of you may end up wandering off?
100%. The entire time I was walking through the forest, I kept thinking, wow, I'd love to dive in deeper and see what we could find. But at the same time, I really, it was, again, very unnerving.
Yeah, that forest gives off a really weird vibe. And yeah, we were all pretty, pretty cautious of one another, just really watching out for each other. And, we didn't want to risk anybody, you know, potentially coming under something that, you know, we couldn't explain. And yeah, it's just that, yeah, like I said, that whole area, it's just such an eerie vibe.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that before. It's almost as if you're expecting to stumble across something peculiar due to the atmosphere that the area gives off.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean, in regards to, I mean, the other aspect of all that is, Nash, obviously, going out to a new location, did you have to do sort of a recon beforehand, you know, as Michaela's mentioned there about the, you know, being high up and near cliff edges and things? Did you have to do a recce on the area that you were potentially going to investigate, or did you just kind of go into it barehanded?
I mean, we did tons of research beforehand on just, you know, the region and such like that, and then we did have time to hike into the forest and go up on the ledge during the day and kind of scout out everything before we did our initial night investigation. We felt it was necessary, especially for that one, to at least get a gauge on the area before we went in there without lights.
Yeah, find our footing.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, so how long was it just the one night you were out there, or did you sort of go out looking for it on consecutive evenings?
Yeah, we just did the one night.
Yeah, I think to be fair, it's best not to tempt fate when you're searching for creatures such as those.
Yeah, definitely.
That's how I felt.
Yeah. I think you've got a very grounded and sensible approach to this, Michaela. I'm appreciating where you're coming from there.
Well, again, if you're working with something where there's like not even a cryptid or unexplainable fear of like what could happen to you, I mean, we were dealing with being away from essentially a large population. It was really hard for any like police, ambulances, or anything to get out there in case anything did happen. It was just, you have to look out for each other's safety.
Yeah, definitely. Super remote. Any possible road to get into this forest was, you know, gated off, and we were pretty out there.
Yeah, very much so. I suppose, I mean, that is the one thing I suppose a lot of people don't take into consideration when you have an interest such as ours, where we love these wonderful and weird creatures that live in such strange locales. It's interesting to always find that there always seems to be some kind of danger element to it that I think a lot of people overlook. And it's, you know, I'm sure we're all aware of certain sad incidents where people have gone out completely unprepared and ended up, you know, in some sad cases, losing their lives. So you can never be too careful in these aspects.
Exactly.
We go into every investigation planning, you know, almost planning for the worst. Obviously, definitely, you know, we've never had to use our medical kit that we take with us, and never had to drag anybody out, luckily. But you know, we always go in with the, you know, the idea that it could happen, and we just always try to make ourselves as prepared as possible.
Absolutely.
Prepare for the worst.
Yeah, hope exactly. Yeah, I was just about to say exactly the same, Michaela. Prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
We're reading each other's minds from across countries.
So, obviously, Nash has been on before and explained everything. So, Michaela, how did you get into cryptids and the paranormal? What was it that drew you into it? Was it Nash's influence, or did you kind of find your own way there and you came together as a duo in regards to working together?
Honestly, ever since we were young, like, we would play outside a lot and try to explain weird things that would happen, you know, in our own backyard and stuff like that. It got to the point where once Nash had his license and we were able to drive and do more things, we were exploring different places with very unexplainable accounts and stuff like that. And so for me, it's just a pure interest thing. I'm related to him. I could leave whenever I wanted to, but I have an interest in seeing how this goes and finding things.
Yeah, well, I suppose it also helps as well, because you've got that family background, so you kind of know each other, you know, the, you know, what you're interested in and what probably you're more interested in as well.
Yeah, definitely. We watched a lot of Monster Quest too growing up together, and I think that's kind of what also helped the cryptid interests. And
so as you refer to there, you're trying to build and do a more filming. So what else have you got planned this year on your schedule? Have you anything in particular that you're wanting to tick off that bucket list, Nash?
I've got plenty, Paul.
Well, I suspected you had.
The list is ever growing.
So what would you like to get stuck into first?
Well, really, with this first season, we're kind of sticking within the United States. I mean, obviously, our plan is to take this more international and you know, start checking some of that stuff off the list. But really, for this one, just in terms of time and financing. We're sticking, you know, pretty stateside for this one. We'll be heading to Arizona next, Louisiana, Vermont, and South Dakota with this season.
Goodness me. Are you flying there, or are you going to put that driving license into practice, Nash?
We will be flying, obviously, depending on how all this whole virus stuff goes over.
Well, yes, same for you. I think we're both here in the UK and yourselves in the US. I think we're both at the start of a very frustrating period for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, let's hope it doesn't get in the way too long, because like I say, I'm intrigued to see where you go based on what you've done before. So What's the key driver this time, Nash? What's pushing you onwards? Is it the fact that you think, right, we're ready for this time, we're really going to get stuck into this and see where we go?
Yeah, I feel like we've been doing it pretty regularly over the last, you know, almost 7 years now, and I think we're just at that point where, you know, we need to go big with it, or, you know, we need to see where we can take it on a larger scale, rather than just, you know, putting out one every now and then, really trying to see if we can put together a proper consecutive season and see how it goes from there, and actually, you know, put it out in the format that we've, you know, always planned to put it out with, is obviously a episodic series, and really just see what people think of it, and obviously, you know, hopefully it goes over well, and we can, you know, we keep doing it. I think so far with the, you know, the stuff we put out, people really are really into it, so I'm hoping they'll really, really enjoy what we have coming, especially since it's, you know, going to be a little bit more cleaner looking, and still going to have that that rough, rugged feel and fast paced, but definitely going to be a lot more polished.
I mean, I'm impressed to see what you do because, you know, as we spoke last time, Nash, I was very impressed with what you'd done on two fronts. One, I thought it was extremely mature, and the way you guys carried yourself was belied your years, without wishing to sound condescending at all. But there was a lot of potential there, and I think the way you're approaching these subjects and the way you film and do your investigations, it's very balanced and down to earth, which I know I mentioned to you last summer. I thought was very refreshing to see.
That's really our goal with this. I think that one thing that we've done really well consecutively over the years is going into our investigations without expectations and going off of our own experiences while listening to other people's accounts.
Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it stands you in good stead because I think especially, you know, there's one cryptid more than any that seems to get most of the airtime, which is everybody's favourite hairy hominid, Bigfoot. Now, we've just had Expedition Bigfoot shown over here in the UK, so I'm not sure if you guys caught any of that at all, but that seemed to try and, before it started, it was kind of saying, well, this is a more serious version of finding Bigfoot. But it once again seemed to go into areas that had been covered before. It was a bit strange, I think's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to catch it. But that's one thing I did hear, though, is that it tried to be different, but it was almost just like a reboot, essentially, with just a different cast of people. We definitely don't kind of stick to tradition in terms of investigating. We kind of just put ourselves out there, and obviously we use a lot of similar equipment, you know, the thermal imagers and, you know, the night vision stuff like that, but we more, you know, go out there and try to find alternatives rather than, you know, the creatures themselves. Obviously when we do our investigations, we're looking for anything that is alive. And usually, like I said, it's, you know, we're trying to find things that, you know, are known animals in the area that could be misidentified. You know, other things that, you know, just maybe it, you know, comes down to mass hysteria. It comes down to, you know, an older story in the region that, you know, people heard about and they saw something and they just kind of associated with that. That's kind of the stuff that we always kind of we aim to find is, you know, more of more specific answers rather than the, you know, the evidence of the actual creature itself. Well, I mean, we still look for.
No, I think we do a very good job at being respectful of people's beliefs while remaining inquisitive. And I think that us being newer in this industry with having such a high interest in it is very good for our perspective. I think it's a novelty that we're really good at playing with.
Yeah, I think so. And the one thing that I find a bone of frustration in regards to, especially when it comes to the modern paranormal shows, is it's, you know, I've spoken to ghost hunters. I've been ghost hunting myself. I'm not sure if you guys have done it, but it's one of the most boring things you could do. But if you watch a television show, it's almost as if, you know, as soon as the lights go down, that's it. Everything kicks off.
That's because they only show you the exciting.
Well, it's nice to know you're as cynical as I am, Nash.
Well, we know, like, you know, we investigate for several hours out in these places, and sometimes it's just as boring, but it's obviously you're just in a different environment with a lot more going on to kind of take into account. You know, with investigating outdoors, you have all of the natural ambience and natural sounds and atmosphere and, you know, just everything that, you know, everything out there is making noise, especially if you're out there and, you know, in the when the weather is nicer, you've got all the insects and birds and other living creatures out there that, you know, have to take into account. So it's almost, I almost tell people it's almost more difficult looking for cryptids because you have all of these other things making noises that you kind of have to, you know, focus around. And, you know, you can't be attributing every sound to, you know, being evidence. And it's difficult.
Yeah, very much so, because, you know, I've lost count of the amount of times I've heard people say that Bigfoot can mimic coyote, when clearly it might just be a coyote, you know? I mean, that's one of the strangest things, you know, like you say. I think it's, and I think that's one of the aspects some people just don't take into consideration. I know it, people think, you know, America's a vast country with some rather dangerous native species, regardless of these weird and wonderful cryptids that are supposed to be wandering around. You know, there are certain areas that, yes, you know, you might be on the lookout for Dogman, but you know, you can't take your eye off the fact that you might get a bear wandering through at some point.
Or an actual wolf.
Yes. Which, you know, when you see some wolves and the size timberwolves can get up to is a daunting prospect at the very least, I would suggest.
Yeah, that's, there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to cryptid investigating. There's a lot of factors that people need to take into account.
Yeah, very much so, and I think it's one of those aspects that is often overlooked. And I always take my hat off to anybody, especially you guys, that go wandering anywhere in America at night in the woods. you know, I certainly wouldn't go in some of the places that you guys have investigated. I'll tell you that.
Well, someone's got to do it.
It was crazy during our investigation in Massachusetts. I remember just being afraid of not necessarily like animals or, you know, falling off a cliff or anything, but there are a lot of people just riding around on ATVs,
yeah,
a lot of guns, a lot of variables.
Yeah, especially in this area of Massachusetts that we're investigating, you know, they're supposed to have a decent history of cult activity in this forest. So we were definitely more afraid of running into other people than we were of running into other animals, especially with, you know, who we were kind of told likes to hang around in those areas. And yeah, like even in the middle of the night in our investigation, we were hearing ATVs and dirt bikes and stuff in the distance. And,
yeah,
you know, we never know, you know, the next corner, you know, behind the next tree, you know, we never knew who or what we were going to come across.
Mm. Yeah, I know it is strange. It is one of those things that I think people don't appreciate, you know, when you talk about bumping into other people, because, you know, people think, oh, well, you're in the middle of nowhere. But obviously lots of other people have the same idea, and there are certain locations that perhaps some unsavory characters may choose because of their remoteness, that you never know what you may accidentally stumble across.
No. Exactly. Yeah, definitely. It's because, I mean, yeah, we've done investigations. Our Devil's Punch Bowl episode, we had people show up as we were wrapping up and, you know, they were kind of going down there for the same, you know, it was same similar reason that we were down there. You know, they, you know, that were aware of the stories and kind of wanted to get their own little scare.
Yeah, I can imagine. I know when I was speaking to Shannon LeGros the other week, we were mentioning this, and she mentioned the fact she was talking to Micah Hanks about this, and he was once in the middle of somewhere, and a man just appeared from nowhere. And he was acting rather strangely, which, you know, is a not the kind of thing you'd like to stumble across in the middle of the woods deep at night.
Exactly.
Yeah, you definitely have to. Those are the other dangers that a lot of, you know, you always got to take into account, is, you know, you never know who or what.
Yeah, I mean, since we last spoke, has any kind of cases caught your attention that, I mean, obviously the ongoing situation in the kind of Chicago area with this resurgence in what they're calling the Chicago or the Lake Michigan Mothman is an intriguing one, because it's one of those that it seems to have just appeared over the last 2 or 3 years, and then when people have started researching it, they've realized it's perhaps been going on for a lot longer than they anticipated.
Yeah, I've been following Tobias Whalen's research to it, and it's pretty interesting stuff. I know myself and my researcher have talked about it pretty extensively, and I've come across some stuff on our own as well that we've research wise that we found it. It's quite an interesting case. I'm curious to see what Seth and the Small Town Monsters guys come across when they do their film out there.
Yeah.
But in terms of anything else, I can't really think of anything that's really caught my eye recently that's kind of happened. Mm. Yeah. Other than that one, just because it's so close.
Yeah, Tobias's book is a fantastic compendium of accounts, and it's very interesting. Like you say, I am really looking forward to what Small Town Monsters take on it, because I know they've touched on it in Terran the Skies a little bit, but it seems like they're expanding their investigation and research into it. It's a very interesting collection, because it's one of the few cryptids that seems to be around an urban area as well, which marks it out, which I don't know about yourself, Nash and Michaela, but it's unusual for us to have such a cryptid without its usual shyness.
Yeah, definitely. It's crazy to get, something like that, like you said, that close to a major metropolitan area, like Chicago, and it's to have them so frequently sighted, which, I mean, as it should be if it's, that close to that big of a population of people.
You'd think it wouldn't want to hang out in Chicago, though. It's one of those things where it's a little unnerving knowing that, like, this type of cryptid could and is, like, not afraid of people and wants to be known.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem to echo the original sightings back in Point Pleasant, because that, whatever that was, seemed to take great pleasure in absolutely terrifying people, especially teenagers.
Yeah, let's just hope this time it's not a major disaster.
Well, yes, there is always that aspect as well, but it seems to have been going on a fair while, though I'm sure, as we speak, no doubt, I'm sure somebody somewhere is blaming Mothman for the coronavirus.
Yeah. Well, hey, West Virginia doesn't have a case yet, so maybe something's going on.
Well, he may even be protecting them, you never know. Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing, because I know last time when we spoke, Nash, we were both share a love for the thylacine. And here we are 8 months later, and we've still not got hold of one at all yet. I'm still very frustrated by this, Nash. How about you?
Very. Yeah, I know that's pretty much the top of my list in terms of things that I want to, do extensive investigation and research into. That's the one that if I ever get the funds to do, I'm definitely gonna dive into that pretty head first. And there's just so much research that still needs to be done on that.
Yeah, I mean, it is like a poster child for cryptozoology in general, I think. Along with Bigfoot, it's one of those, like we said last time, Nash, it's one of those creatures, because we've got footage of it, and strangely enough some new footage has only just come to light in the last week or so, it just seems to capture people's imaginations more than many.
Well, I think it just goes to show that the methods that we take to deem something extinct are either faulty or non-existent. Like, who is the one that, does the work that just says, there's no more, it's because it just seems to be, a pretty recurring thing, especially with, we have Forrest Galante's yes. Show Extinct or Alive. He goes out and looks for these creatures that are still being seen that have been, deemed extinct.
Mm.
And in some cases, he does find evidence that they are still around.
I think it's important to note the fact that I think as a country, or not even just a country, as a world, we've gotten better about taking care of our environment, and I think it's very plausible, and it's a very natural explanation that, like, even if these things were once on the brink of extinction, like, the thriving capabilities are coming back, and that's why this is so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned Forrest, because I love that show. I think his passion for his art, his subject is wonderful to see, and he has basically proved that, you know, the term extinct is a very malleable word, because as you say, Nash, who decides this?
Yeah, I really enjoy watching his stuff and kind of seeing, yeah, like you said, there's such a good passion too. Like, he, you know, does a really good job of explaining everything, and you can tell he really genuinely cares about these animals. And
yeah, I know he was. I think the one episode that sticks out in my mind is, I think they were looking for the clouded leopard that hadn't been seen for the best part of 20 years, and he was really upset to see that people were wandering around with guns in what was supposed to be a protected park.
Well, yeah, the where was that? Taiwan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah, that was. Yeah, he was fighting with people pretty good about trying to get them to stop.
He has.
And I think that.
Oh, sorry. Go on, Nash.
I think I came across a news report not long ago. They did actually find.
Yeah.
A small grouping of them still alive, and they. We're going to protect them.
Yeah, he has got an outstanding record. I think is it six he's rediscovered so far, two series, which I think is absolutely remarkable.
I think so. So I know the tortoise, yes. And the Galapagos. No, then the Zanzibar leopard. I know he didn't like find it directly, but they got it on trail camera footage.
Yep.
I think those are the only. I haven't fully watched season two yet, so I'm sure there's more. But
yeah, very much so. He's it's the kind of show I think we need more of, to be honest, Nash, because he's, like you say, he's got a really good way of bringing his passion to life and getting us involved in the show. And he's clearly a man whose conservation is one of his driving factors, as well as his love of animals.
Yeah, definitely.
So, in regards to, you know, we're talking about Forrest, I also see that Josh Gates has finally returned to the Fortean subject with his new series, which I know we're both both big fans of Josh as well, because he's obviously been doing Expedition Unknown, I think, for the best part of 6 years. So I'm glad to see he's decided to return to the weird field, as it were.
Well, kind of. I mean, he's not really, you know, in it. It's to the other two people. But, yeah, it's nice to see that he's, you know, doing something like that, at least of some capacity, of sending these people out to research this stuff a little more fully.
Yeah, because I think, I'm not sure when we're going to get it over here, but I have seen the trailer for the first episode, because I think he has actually gone to, they've gone after the Lake Michigan Mothman, I believe.
Yeah, because I know Tobias is in the interview on that episode.
Yeah, I saw Tobias mention that the other day. I was thinking, yeah, he's not having a bad year so far.
Yeah,
brilliant. Good luck to them. No, he's a really good chap, is Tobias. I'm very fortunate to have spoken to him, and his book's fantastic. So, what do you think? Your plans are in regards to, you know, like you were saying about the areas that you're choosing. Which particular cryptids are you wanting to kind of track down this year, Nash?
So for the Arizona episode, we'll be doing the Mogollon Monster, which is a Bigfoot case in the Mogollon Rim region of northern Arizona. We will be doing the Rogueru. Some it's a dogman werewolf like thing in Louisiana. I'm pretty sure I just butchered the hell out of that name, but
well, that's how I pronounce
and we
it.
we will be regrouping with Alex Petikoff again and doing a champ episode.
Oh, brilliant.
And then we will be doing South Dakota has their own Banshee legend in the Badlands, so we will be doing some research into that.
Hey, that's a very varied and surprising collection you've chosen there, which, that sounds really interesting, especially the Banshee one. So tell me more about that, because obviously Banshees are more traditionally known for hanging around Irish and Scottish castles.
Yeah, so the Banshee of the Badlands, we came across a few years ago in a friend of mine, Chad Lewis's book, talked about it.
Mm.
And it's, it's very similar in the characteristics of, the Irish Banshee. And, it usually is a harbinger of doom and such like that. And, if you see it, you something bad's going to happen. And it's usually accompanied by a skeletal figure that plays some kind of instrument. And the sightings of it are pretty varied, but we have found pretty extensive research into it and stories on it, and it's gonna be an interesting one. It's definitely one that not a lot of people have heard of, so I think that's why we're really excited to kind of cover it, is to kind of shed some new light onto some more uninvestigated in the capacity that we're gonna be doing. So yeah, I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. It's South Dakota is not far for us, and the Badlands is a pretty unique area. So that one's gonna be a good one.
To be completely honest, I didn't realize that the Banshee of the Badlands wasn't a more known legend. I remember through the Badlands as a kid, my mom would be like, "Be careful, don't look outside. You might see a banshee, and the car might crash, and stuff like that."
No. Oh.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a more well known legend.
How interesting. Yeah, it is odd that you know of it as people mentioning it, Michaela, when I've heard of it briefly. I don't know much about it, like Nash, I think, has just mentioned there. The fact that it turns up with music, with a musical accompaniment, is makes it a very intriguing monster, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope they play good music at least.
Yeah, right. Freebird!
No country.
Well, you never know. I mean, it's one of those things. It may take requests. Who knows?
That'd be sweet. Dinner and a show.
The Banshee and the Touchscreen Jukebox.
Yeah.
Yeah, stranger things have happened. No, I'm with you there, Michaela. I think it's already on what you've said. I'm gonna try and find out a lot more about it, because that's a really interesting thing. So was it, as we've touched on there, the Banshee traditionally turns up, wails outside people's windows over here, and usually a member of said family and castle passes away dramatically. So is that its reputation over there, then, in the Badlands, that if you stumble across it, it brings bad luck or death to whoever crosses its path?
From what I've found, I think so. I think it's definitely, I think it almost kind of has like that, like the Pukwudgie take to, where I think it's known to kind of lure some people away. And yeah, I've heard different conflicting stories on it, so it's really going to be interesting to, really boots on the ground, investigate it further, and really kind of shed some light and put some more, truth to some of the things. And
yeah, very much. Well, I'm looking forward to that episode, especially. That sounds, I wish you the best of luck and take care. looking for that, because that doesn't sound like a particularly friendly one either. So you, as you touched on there, you're going to be joining Alex up on Lake Champlain again. So how's your sea legs? Are you looking forward to getting out on the water?
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. You know, we've done some Lake Monster stuff here in Minnesota, so it's gonna be cool to kind of get out and look for something that, you know, look for one that's a lot more popular and a lot more evidence involved in terms of sightings and potential of existing.
Yeah, champs. Probably, if you asked me and had to sort of pin me down onto which one of the world's many lake monsters is probably there in some description, I'm all in on champ. I'm not necessarily saying it's a dinosaur, but I'm certain that there's something very strange lurking under the sea there, under the water rather.
Yeah, there's we've been coming across a lot of pretty interesting sightings and stories from the region, and obviously, you know, I've been more in contact with Alex and some of the guys he knows out in that area that, you know, have had just different stories and you know, working on different projects regarding the creature, and it's going to be a lot of fun to, you know, really explore that more deeper and get to the depths of that that story.
Yeah, figuratively as well as relatively, I suspect. Champ's one of those. I mean, most people probably came to know about Champ because of the infamous Sandra Mansi photo, and obviously it was the first Small Town Monsters series, which Alex directed as well. So I've always been fascinated by Champ, primarily because just how large Lake Champlain is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, it dwarfs. I mean, it makes Loch Ness look like a puddle, to be fair.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty extensive investigation.
Very much so. So, are you planning on going out on the lake itself, or as much as you can, or are you going to do a bit of both?
Yeah, we'll do a bit of both, land and lake, mostly lake as much as we can. Mm-hmm. I know Alex says there is some places out there that, you know, do rent boats, and we can get, you know, canoes and kayaks and such. So, by any means that we can get out in the lake as much as we can, I think that's going to really increase our potential of having a sighting, and then as well as, you know, doing investigations from land where the more of the land-based sightings have happened. And it's going to be really extensive. And
yeah, it certainly seems to be probably the most well spotted of American lake monsters, I would suggest as well. It often, when you think it's disappeared, then usually we get two or three sightings just pop up all at once. So in regards to you two, what do you think in regards to its potential? Do you think it's probably the most likely spot that there could be a lake monster in North America?
I think for me, it always comes down to, you know, I personally want this stuff to exist, but, you know, we're obviously going to go into it with, you know, our usual level of skepticism and really dig in deep and, you know, leave no stone unturned, as much information as we can gather, and, you know, before we even, you know, begin to, you know, make our own personal assumptions on whether or not it's out there. Obviously, if we end up having a sighting, then, you know, there it is. Then, you know, there's got to be something. But yeah, I don't know. It's this. I mean, there's been so many sightings over so many years that there definitely has to be something large living out there, whether it's, you know, your plesiosaur or not. It's, you know, something's being seen.
What about you, Michaela? What's your thought of lake monsters in North America?
I like to go into things with a healthy dose of skepticism right off the bat. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy listening to personal accounts and listening and using my own experiences. So I think until I'm out there and can feel, I guess, the energy and see what's happening, I like to say, it's hard to believe something like this could still exist, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, until you know, we found that until you put yourselves in the shoes of the people that have seen the stuff, you really can't make a positive assumption.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, Champ, like I say, has been around for a very long time. And I think, like you say, I don't necessarily think that it has to be a plesiosaur. I think if someone comes across anything that's unusually large, I think that would be enough for a lot of people. Because, you know, as you refer to, there's been so many sightings. There's clearly something there, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a dinosaur.
Right. You know, like, obviously now with the a lot of the Loch Ness speculation is that it's a giant eel. You know, it's, you know, even if it's, you know, an answer like that where it's, you know, like you said, an abnormally large known animal, people are just going to be like, okay, all right, sweet, mystery solved. Like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So how long are you planning on going up to Champlain then? Are you taking a week or so or a few days?
3-4 days usually is what we give ourselves to kind of, you know, film everything, you know, B-roll interviews, and then obviously the investigations. I think with Champlain, we'll probably try to do some form of a daytime investigation on the lake as well as our main nighttime investigation, just to cover as much ground as possible, especially since this is a creature that is seen both day and night.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a full-on investigation there because, like you say, it's one of those cryptids that just doesn't seem to work on normal parameters. It's quite seasonal, and it's not particularly bothered where it pops up sometimes.
Yeah, it's probably gonna be our most extensive investigation that we've ever done to date.
So, tell me more about this strange creature that's wandering around Arizona then. So, what are the reports about this particular monster?
So, I came across the Mogollon Monster just doing some general research on cryptids in the United States. And it's, you know, your kind of your typical regional Bigfoot story, hairy, you know, 7 to 8 feet tall, large footprints being, you know, left behind. It's, you know, it's a, from what I understand, it's a, you know, the local Boy Scout troops talk about it, you know, around the campfire at night. And it's, you know, you're pretty traditional in terms of local legend as you can. There's a lot of Native American stories that, you know, talk about this sort of creature living in the area. And it really, the region that it lives in, the Mogollon Rim, it's like the perfect environment for something like this. You know, it's northern Arizona. It's not too hot. It's not incredibly cold. Yeah, it snows, you know, a little bit, but it's still not unbearable. You know, there's lakes and rivers nearby, so you got plenty of water sources. It's a densely forested area, so it can easily hide. Like, it's like prime environment for something like this to be living in undetected.
Yeah, and I'm not that familiar with it, but I know it's supposed to be one of the more aggressive versions of Bigfoot out there. How's that?
Yeah. Not a lot of people that I've talked to about it know much about it. So, like, you know, this kind of goes along with, like, the Banshee of the Badlands. It's, a, you know, it's another one that we're going to kind of bring to the forefront of research. And from what I found, I know, Finding Bigfoot, I know, did an episode on it. Mm. Other than that, there really hasn't been anything really, like, mainstream into it, other than, you know, a lot of local expeditions that I've come across. A lot of local Bigfoot encrypted groups have obviously done their work on it, but nothing really big, like, you know, anybody from outside the area coming in. Like, we will be that's really trying to shed light on it and extensively look for it. But yeah, it's it's one of those ones where it does have a reputation of attacking. Or, you know, I know a lot of stories of it, you know, ransacking campsites and chasing people off, throwing things. It's definitely a more, seems like it's more aggressive in terms of your traditional Bigfoot accounts.
Yeah.
So it's definitely going to be an interesting one.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that one, Michaela.
As much as I can be. I get a little scared sometimes running through the forest and just kind of hoping that something won't snatch me up and take me. I'm a very small girl.
Well, especially since we'll be going there in in the summertime too, so we're going to have a lot of the known Arizona wildlife that's known to kill you. around a lot of scorpions and snakes to worry about, and obviously bears and the like. So it's definitely going to be definitely a lot we're going to have to watch out for with that one, other than the creature itself.
Yeah, very much so. Well, yeah, you will always, as always on your expeditions, Nash, I wish you the very best with that one. You touched on one of my favorites, which as you criticized yourself for mispronouncing it, but I pronounce it the Ruguru. It's all right in my book. Whether we've upset a lot of people in Louisiana and the Deep South, then I apologize on both our behalves for our pronunciation.
I'm sorry.
Don't do yourself down. So, I mean, that's probably out of the ones that you've mentioned, other than, you know, obviously Champ's world famous, but out of the rest of them, that's probably the one most people will be familiar with.
Yeah, and we're timing it. We're trying to time it with the local festival down there that shares the creature's namesake and has a little bit to do with the history of it. So we're trying to time it with that, so we can kind of cover that in our episode to kind of show how it's affected like the local culture and stuff in the region. And that one's definitely going to be an interesting one for us. Like, we've done dog man research up here in Wisconsin. But we haven't done anything, in that sort of environment, the swampy bayou. It's definitely gonna be interesting to see what really all goes into that one. I'm really excited to learn more about it, obviously from the people in the area, because it definitely seems to be your local campfire story, and I think I can speak for Michaela too, excited to really research that one more in person.
Yeah, it's an interesting cryptid for me, because there seems to be two versions of it as well. There's the modern interpretation of it, but I've also seen it as described as some kind of predatory religious monster that had a taste for Catholics. in one of its early incarnations, which, as cryptids go, most of them are usually a one size fits all. Bigfoot's wandering around the woods, occasionally might get a bit grumpy, but rest of the time he's pretty chilled. Whereas the Ruguru is known for being particularly fearsome, but it's also got this other backstory to it, which I find interesting.
Yeah, because it's got another name. It's the Lupe Guru or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. But yeah, it's like you said, it's got two different inclinations of it. And it's obviously the more modern stories are the Ruguru. And that's kind of seems to be your more traditional kind of dog man, what have you, large, hairy, bipedal wolf creature. But yeah, there's definitely like you said, like the older accounts of it kind of being more of a religious figure, if you will.
It's like a religious hitman.
Yeah.
Sounds like it, which I found odd as well, because obviously that particular part of the US is probably the one that's got the largest French influence in the modern era. If you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nash, but that's always been my interpretation around there, and that's another thing that kind of builds into the legend of the Rougarou.
Yeah, it's from what I've come across, like the stories of it, a lot of it comes from obviously the French settlers that moved in, obviously from France and also Quebec, that brought the story with them from France and the like. Whether it's just your local boogeyman tale that, you know, they've just been kind of, you know, being told throughout their whole lives and they just brought with them and kind of found something to associate with it, or if it is, you know, its own entity that they just coined that name because of obviously the association and the common traits are still yet to be seen. But yeah, definitely seems like it goes back quite a bit, both in local Louisiana culture and as well as French culture.
And it is odd as well, because like I say, other than, you know, the modern reports, you know, as we've mentioned when we spoke last time, the Beast of Bray Road is probably the most famous dog man. And I've always found it quite peculiar that essentially the bottom end of the country's got a very similar version of it, though theirs clearly seems to be more, like you say, based on what we would traditionally think of as a werewolf.
Right. And I think too, the region that it's seen in too probably lends a little bit more credibility to something like that possibly existing, just because of the, you know, how dense the bayou is. Whereas, you know, you get like Bray Road where it's you know, literally just a rural road in the middle of the country that, you know, has maybe small little, you know, small patches of woodland forest in the area, but nothing big enough to support a creature of that size living undetected, especially with the amount of farms in the area. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting to get waist deep and find some dog man.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's plenty of bayous down there for exploration, I would suggest. And once again, you have to be very careful of the natural creatures down there, because obviously that's alligator country.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm not trying to put you off these trips, by the way. I'm just
Sorry, putting me off. I think you're kind of putting her off.
I forgot about the alligators. That's for sure.
Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, sorry, Michaela. Didn't mean to cause undue alarm.
It's fine. I'm used to it.
We're gonna die.
Oh, let's not tempt fate. So, in regards to, I mean, like I say, I've always been fascinated by the Rougarou. It's a really interesting creature. And I know I saw a documentary about it the other day, and they had those wonderful interviews with locals who, for them, yep, it's there. We know it's there. We're quite comfortable with it. And it was interesting as well, though, this particular program I saw, they were trying to kind of say, they were saying that everybody was mistaken and it was a Bigfoot, which I thought was peculiar, because whenever I've heard the descriptions, it's clearly not.
Right.
And
I think a lot of, when it comes to Dogman stuff, I think you get a lot of clashing in terms of what it is. Mm-hmm. I know Bray Road is no different, because when we were out there doing some research, a lot of people said that they didn't think that it was a werewolf creature, or that they actually believed it was a Bigfoot. And it was very back and forth. So I'm not surprised that down there you're getting the same thing, because I think, you know, when people start talking about something tall and hairy, I think most people's mind goes instantly to Bigfoot. Mm.
There's a lot of association, like a lot of a loose association with the unknown and Bigfoot for some reason.
Yeah. So yeah, obviously when you start to describe a tall, wolf-like creature, though, I think going to Bigfoot is kind of difficult. unless you have no idea what a Bigfoot actually looks like, and you're just associating it with the tall, hairy.
I mean, that is the thing that makes me smile, is that when people say, oh yeah, I've seen a dog man, and somebody goes, no, you've seen Bigfoot. What? Well, hang on. You know, which creature, you know, because I was talking to an Australian author and researcher, Tony Healy, and he was saying they've noticed in Australia over the last 3 or 4 years, they've started to get reports of people claiming to see dogmen down there, which is a recent development, because normally if anybody, you know, once again, no, you've not seen a dogman, you've seen a Yowie. But he thinks it's more of a cultural response to what's happening in Bray Road and Dogman. And he personally thinks that people think straight away, they're thinking of a dogman rather than it could be Bigfoot, and that's why they're claiming to see it.
Which is odd, though, too, because, like, you know, the story of the Yowie go back so far.
Yeah.
But it's odd that, you know, people would be, I mean, obviously, if they're, you know, unless they're just unaware of how extensive the Yowie sightings and the story of the Yowie are. That one's weird.
He's not had many. He's had, I think he was saying there's about half a dozen, but they all describe it having a muzzle, which immediately is not not anything you associate with, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or the Yowie.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's peculiar. So, as we've touched on several times, your Kickstarter's coming up. So, when does it launch, and what are you hoping?
Yeah, so March 31st is the day. So it'll run throughout the whole month of April. Our goal with it is to raise the money to film, you know, to cover our travel expenses and, you know, our pretty much everything that we need to go to pretty much fund each of these episodes. We, you know, we have all the equipment that we have, so it's more of just getting us there and seeing us through the production of each of the four episodes. I'm pretty hopeful. I think we've got a good group of people behind us that are, you know, really helping and making in helping us spread word of it. And we're going to be putting out a lot more promo stuff for it as well.
Yeah.
This has been completely self-funded for the past 7 years, and I think personally, it'll feel good to have some more support from people that are interested in the content we make too.
100% too, and it's, you know, it's just gonna make us feel like, you know, we actually have a good following, and, you know, our audience really does generally want to see us do more. But yeah, like Michaela said, like this has been 100% our own money, no help from anybody. You know, we have. You know, we have funded these episodes, and we just, you know, that's kind of the other reason for this Kickstarter is, you know, we want to do bigger things, and we want to, you know, go new places with the show, and we just can't do that with our personal bank accounts. So that's why we're, you know, asking the community to, you know, lend us some money. We've got, you know, we've got some really good rewards. We got, you know, T-shirt options, DVDs. Everyone that donates, no matter the amount, will get their name in the credits of each episode. We have a private Skype call option with the whole crew. Behind the scenes photos that we're gonna offer from each, you know, you'll get every person that donates to that tier, they'll get 5 behind the scenes photos from each episode. Signed by all of us, and a nice little personalized note. We have an executive producer option if you want to donate, you know, the bigger amounts. But we got a lot that people can easily afford that we're giving out. You know, we have a T-shirt option, we have a DVD option, we have a T-shirt and DVD option. You know, we have an option just, you know, if you just want to donate and don't want anything out of it, you just want to support the project. We're making it very, very easy for anybody to toss in, you know, as much as they can.
Yeah, well, I hope so, because, you know, as I said to you last time, Nash, I was very impressed with your body of work. And there's a great deal of potential and talent involved in your crew. I think you're a breath of fresh air, and I trust and hope that the community supports you, and I'll certainly see what we can do here. And I'll put the link in my show notes for you to try and help as well. So I wish you the very best of luck with that, my friend, because I'm really interested to hope and see you do more.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Our plan as of right now is season one will be released sometime in the fall of 2021. I know some people are like, whoa, why so far away? Well, we have full-time jobs that we also have to, you know, take into account. So,
yeah.
Our plan is to have everything filmed by next summer, kind of edit as we go, and, you know, initial release will be all 5 episodes in one chunk on both Amazon Prime and YouTube for your binging pleasure.
And I feel like even if we don't meet our goals or our support maybe seem a little lackluster, I don't think it's going to deter our team at all. We already have our equipment, and there are plenty of local legends.
Yeah, well, one way or another, we're still going to be making new episodes. We'll continue to self-fund these as much as we can, and come together and kind of, you know, spread out our expenses, and one way or another, new stuff's coming.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to whatever you've got installed, though I hope that Kickstarter gives you everything you need to keep building on what you've already done so far. So, listen, thank you for joining me today. It's been lovely to speak to you both. Where can everybody keep up to date and follow you online, guys?
So you can find me on my personal Instagram, at Nash Hoover. That's also my Twitter, all one word. At Chasing Legends TV is our Facebook and Instagram. Our website is www.chasinglegendscrew.com. Really, you go to the website, you're going to find links to everything. All of our social and all of our episodes are on that website as well. So really, the website's really like the best place to go to learn all you need. I know Mikhail's Instagram name is kind of difficult.
Yeah, my Instagram really doesn't pertain as much to the show. It's still linked, but I think if you're looking to keep up to date with what we're doing content-wise, website's best option. We're very up to date on Instagram and Facebook usually.
Yeah, my personal Instagram and the Chasing Legends Instagram is the best place social-wise, and the Facebook page to keep up with us, like, more up-to-date-wise. But, yeah, in terms of just general information on the show, to learn about all who was involved, the website's the best place to go.
Fantastic. Well, listen, best of luck with the Kickstarter. Looking forward to your further adventures around the United States. And you both take care and look after yourself. And hopefully we'll speak to you again sometime. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's been a pleasure.